And we're moving right on into our next guest. If you're just joining us, you were on the fifth day of Smartest 2008 and the third day of our keynote presentations. We've just heard Molly Gordon, and now it's time for Allison Stanfield. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Ariane.
You, too, are back with us for your second year at Smartest.
I am. I'm very happy to be here.
And this year, you come carrying a brand new book with you. How exciting.
I am. I'm kind of waiting for them to drop at my doorstep any second now.
Oh, you get to run out and pull them in and look at them. Oh, my gosh. Hold them in your hand.
Well, I have the two advanced copies already. So.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So tell us briefly, tell us first the title and why you decided to write this book.
The title is I'd Rather Be in the Studio, The Artist's No Excuse Guide to Self-Promotion, and it takes the artists, the eight or nine major excuses I hear from artists about not promoting their work, and kind of gives artists an action plan as to how to respond to those excuses. It's based on the almost 6 years now of my newsletters and classes and workshops.
Oh, so it's going to be really full of very current and timely information.
It's pretty timely, which is why I decided to publish it myself. I wanted to get it out there fast.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great way to do. Publishing on demand is the best thing that ever happened. Allison is an artist advocate, a workshop leader, a very happy and relieved author, and she also produces the free weekly Art Marketing Action newsletter and podcast. And you can find her and these on artbizcoach.com and artbizblog.com. Allison, I'd like to know if you want me to come back and open the lines for questions. When we just did this with Molly, it was pretty tricky. It sounded like we have a lot of people listening today.
I heard that. I can leave about 5 minutes at the end for questions.
We can try it again.
And we can try it again, or you and I can just go back and forth with questions. I think you had a couple of questions you might want to ask, so that's fine.
Okay, the questions that I sent you earlier, I can come back and field those to you.
Sure, especially that second one. I like that one.
Okay, great. I will do that.
Okay.
All right, I'm gonna hop off. Artists, Allison is all yours.
Hi, everyone. Again, I'm really happy to be here, and I really appreciate Ariane inviting me back for a second year. And this year, I'm here to talk about how to generate buzz on a shoestring budget. I think this might fit nicely, although I didn't hear the whole last call. I know it was about money, so I think this might fit nicely into that. I wanted to start by telling everyone how I became interested in this subject, which is really about coming up with creative ideas for self-promotion. Creative ideas often generate buzz. See, I worked in a small, well, not small, but mid-sized art museums for 10 years in the Midwest. We had staffs of about 12 to 25 and more people. First, I worked as a curator and then as an educator. And in both roles, part of my job was not just installing and interpreting the art, but making sure that people would come see it. We were always under pressure from our boards of directors to get people through the doors into the museum. Installing museum-quality art is just one thing, but getting people to come look at it is quite another. And there's a clincher to this. We had very little money in our budgets. You would be shocked at how little. Most artists I hear think museums have all this money, but they really, really don't. They're almost always pinched for cash. So we did most of our programming on a shoestring budget. Now, we can't pretend that you don't need money for your art career, because you do. You've heard it before, but you need money to make money. The thing is, I don't want you to go into debt. I don't want you to max out credit cards. I want you to have a healthy bank account that allows you to live comfortably and with peace of mind. But I also want you to save money where you can. I don't want you throwing tons of money at advertising and fancy brochures and flash-designed websites that you really don't need. So in our short time together, I'm going to share with you some stories of artists who have done the very, very much the same thing that I did in art museums. Many of the stories are taken from my book, I'd Rather Be in the Studio, and they're expanded on for you here. These artists have used non-traditional ways of promoting themselves which generated buzz and helped them sell their art with little or no upfront money. That's key. Help them sell their art. After the stories, I'm going to show you how you can brainstorm ways to generate buzz for yourself, and then I'm going to leave you with a challenge. So if you have your handouts with you, I'm on page one. We're starting with stories, and we're going to start by talking about getting creative with your financing. I'm going to tell you the story about Karen Bubb. That's B-U-B-B. Karen wanted to go to China. She thought it was a chance of a lifetime. It was a cultural tour where the ticket alone cost $3,200. And she thought, how in the world am I going to pay for this without going into debt? Now, Karen is a mixed media artist. She's also the public arts manager for the city of Boise, Idaho. And she's a big fan of solving problems with others, with the help of others. And it's a good thing, because one trusted advisor gave Karen the idea that helped get her to China. That advisor recommended that Karen sell shares of the experience. If she could sell 100 shares at $32 each, Karen could pay for her trip. And then she wondered, why in the world would people pay $32 for a trip to China that they're not going to take? So Karen had to give them value. And here's what she gave them in return for their $32. Four things. A stock certificate, which was actually a hand-pulled print that doubled as a thank you note for their purchase. So there's one piece of art. Two, she gave them a handmade collaged postcard that she sent from China. So it had the Chinese postmark on it. And apparently, probably some really cool Chinese stamps on it as well. She also gave them, upon return, an encaustic painting, a small one, about 6 by 5.5 inches, that was based on the trip and her Chinese experience. And then finally, an invitation to attend a private party and slideshow after the trip. And by the way, that private party was at a really cool house that everyone wanted to see. So there's three pieces of art and a private party. I don't think she could add much more value than that for $32. So she committed to the trip in January of 2004 and was due to leave on May 26th. A reporter got wind of her plan, and an article appeared in the April 17th issue of the Boise newspaper. So keep in mind, that's April 17th. She's supposed to leave on May 26th, so she has like 5 weeks. Her plan to sell shares, her little plan to sell 100 shares to all the people she knew, had just exploded to include anyone who wanted to participate and read about it in the newspaper. Before she knew it, she had sold 225 shares. Remember, she only needed 100 to make the 3,200. 30% of these shares went to absolute strangers. So that's what, like 70, 75 new people on her mailing list? And she also had just over, remember, the month to make it all come together. So she spent those 5 weeks making the collaged postcards that she had to send from China. What's fascinating about this story is that what started out as an adventure on a cultural tour suddenly became so much bigger because of this creative financing that she did. Her trip was now a performance piece. The connections to her shareholders were powerful. She said that these connections informed every decision that she made. And she used any additional funds to purchase an audio recorder and a camera to document the trip. Upon her return, so she comes home and she has to make 225 paintings. And she worked for 2.5 years on the promised paintings. And last year, in 2007, finally, the paintings were exhibited as a group before they were dispersed to their owners. And that was always part of the plan, that her gallery would exhibit them as a group before they went to their owners. So she created a buzz in 2004 and then again in 2007 and probably in between as well. When I interviewed her, I just loved this story so much. I couldn't help asking if, looking back on this long process, if she'd do anything different. And she said she would absolutely do it all over again, but she would probably pay closer attention to creating a realistic budget. I asked if she'd charge more for her shareholders, and after only a slight hesitation, she said, "I might, but it wouldn't be over $50, because part of the success and fun was involving so many people in the process." She said, "I gained numerous fans just by completing it and doing what I said I was going to do." She said, "I also did a body of work I wouldn't have done otherwise, which was very satisfying." So here's some lessons to learn from Karen's stories, from Karen's story. One, have a goal in mind. Karen's was $3,200. What's yours? What do you want to accomplish? Is it adding people to your mailing list? Is it meeting someone? What do you want to accomplish? Two, seek out the support of your galleries. The gallery that had long represented Karen was very supportive of her decision and her funding methods. They wanted to exhibit this finished group of paintings and held it in their schedule for her. So it's important to have this support before you take on such a project like this. The collaboration between the artist and the gallery just eases everyone's minds, lessens the risk of any surprises, and it also just leads to a win-win for both artist and gallery, because more buzz from the artist equals more people in the gallery. Three, the third lesson to learn from Karen is to have your marketing materials in order. When you plan on creating a buzz, the media can catch wind of it at any time. Your ideas can explode. So when they call, the media is going to expect you to have a press release or at least a well-thought-out description or explanation of your project and print quality photos. And the fourth lesson to learn from Karen is to create a realistic budget. I think she would definitely tell you that. Spend time on it and hammer out the details. I love that story. I love the way she created buzz and generated funds at the same time. And while the finished work wasn't for sale, it went to her shareholders, you can't help but know that eventually that's going to pay off for more and more sales. So Karen devised this unusual way to raise funds, and you can do the same thing. The only limit to the possibilities is your imagination. Here's some other creative financing ideas. Have a pre-sale. David Castle, who's here in Denver, Colorado, did just that. He has this annual pilgrimage that he makes to the Oregon coast. And last year he decided to have a pre-sale of his works that he was planning to produce while in Oregon. He invited people to select, oh, by the way, he is an abstract watercolor artist, and he invited people to select a palette of two colors that he could work into an original abstract watercolor he would paint just for them. He marketed his idea through his blog, a special email message, and he also mailed, snail mail, an invitation to 125 top leads, so presumably people who had already collected and purchased his work. He priced the work, they were small unframed works, at half the cost, and he also offered a money-back guarantee. His pre-sale plan led to the sale of 17 paintings before he left on his trip and an additional 9 when people came to his studio to pick up their purchases because they wanted to buy something for their friends, for gifts. David said he spent less than $50 to market the idea, which I imagine was mostly on postage. To read more about him, you can go to David Castle, that's Castle as in royal homes, davidcastleart.com. Another idea is from Pippi Johnson at PIPPIJohnson.com. Pippi offers commissioned painting packages of, quote, the view from your dock, deck, or window to neighbors in Kenora, Ontario. The package includes one 16 by 20 inch framed original, three matted and framed prints, and 50 cards with envelopes. See, right there, people can see that it's more than something they hang on their wall, but something they can use and share with other people. I realize that lots of artists are already offering these three things, prints, paintings, and gift note cards, but putting the package together, showing potential patrons you're showing your potential patrons the possibilities that they might not have considered otherwise. So I think that's a really nice idea, is to package something for them. Okay, those are some ideas for creative financing. There's a million other ideas out there, I'm sure. I want to talk now about getting creative with your venues, creative exhibition spaces, because art is everywhere. In fact, some people think that relegating art to galleries and museums is locking it away where only an elite group of people can see it. Keeping in mind that as a former museum professional, I have the greatest respect for art galleries and museums, I still want to encourage you to think beyond those halls and galleries when you're trying to generate buzz. Think like Michael Kelty. Michael is an artist in Ypsilanti, Michigan. He's a painter, but he also makes marionettes, and he enjoys performing. So he has combined his arts. His marionettes don't yodel. They aren't for kids like those in The Sound of Music. He has built a portable stage for the marionettes, and he produces what he calls body stage shows in bars and other places where adults congregate. Never heard of anything like it, and I love the idea of art showing up where it wouldn't normally exist. Or consider Corinne and Nancy in Yellow Springs, Ohio. In 2006, these two innovative artists opened a gallery in, get this, the public restroom at the Chamber of Commerce. And they did so with the help of the Yellow Springs Arts Council. It's called, quite appropriately, the Chamber Pot Gallery, and their local story attracted the attention of the Associated Press. It got in the papers nationally, from the New York Times to the LA Times, and then to papers in Canada, Kuwait, and China. The artists were also mentioned on CNN's Entertainment News and National Public Radio. As you can imagine, the headlines are priceless. You can find out more about Corinne, Nancy, and the gallery at chamberpotgallery.com. Now, if you've never heard of the Museum of Bad Art, you should visit museumofbadart.org. Don't worry, I'm not going to encourage you to show your art at the Museum of Bad Art. Their tagline is "Art too bad to be ignored." And no one has more fun with art than MOBA. Given their mission, which is community-based private institution dedicated to the collection, preservation, exhibition, and celebration of bad art in all its forms and in all its glory, the Museum of Bad Art can be more than irreverent with their collection of bad art, but it's still fun stuff. Years ago, MOBA hauled their esteemed collection of bad art into the forest for an exhibit under the trees. And I noticed recently on their website a more recent exhibition of shrink-wrapped art. They took their collection of bad art to someone that could ensure them that shrink-wrapping would protect it, because they wanted to display it in a car wash. They wanted to create a drive-through art gallery. Now, once again, the former museum professional in me just cringes at the thought of art anywhere near all that water. I'm just trying to get you to think outside the box. And I love the idea of a drive-through gallery. It's great fun. We want drive-through everything these days, don't we? Okay. So those are some more some ideas for getting creative with your venues. And hopefully they and some exercises I'll go through later will help give you some creative ideas for venues. Let me give you now 10 principles for creating buzz. I think on your handout there are 8 principles, but I've added 2 more, and I think if I spend any more time with this, I could add another 10. But let's go over 10 principles for creating buzz. The first one is that creative self-promotion appeals to buyers directly. It isn't for promoting yourself to galleries and museums. This is really important. The galleries and museums might read about you in the paper because of your creative self-promotion efforts, but many of the people who oversee galleries and museums are still traditionalists who have a much more conservative viewpoint of how artists should promote and sell their work. They have real ideas on this, which may mean that artists should just stick to sending postcards and portfolios. Ha. Okay. So creative self-promotions appeals directly to buyers. Number 2, you can't do everything. You have to be selective as to where you spend your energy. Always ask yourself, where will I get the most bang for my time and money? Set your priorities and get clear on them. We all love to come up with good ideas, but pick the best ones and follow through on them. Have a goal in mind, like Karen did with her trip to China. The third principle is that the more you involve people in the planning, the bigger buzz you'll create. You could go it all alone, as artists tend to do, but why would you? Two heads are almost always better than one, and that second head brings his or her ideas and mailing list to the table. The more people that are in on a happening, the larger the potential audience. I have a formula for this. That's the more people equals more ideas equals bigger potential audience equals more buzz. So involve more people in on the planning. Number 4, try to be truly remarkable to stand out in the crowd. Artists who attract a following and get written up in the history books do so because they have somehow differentiated themselves from other artists. How is your art different and uniquely your own? How are your ideas fresh? I encourage you to look at the book Purple Cow by Seth Godin for more on this. Number 5, make people feel like they're part of something special or something secret. And particularly thinking about your top collectors or your top prospects. Extend handmade or hand-delivered invitations while maybe the rest of your list receives postcards or emails. I've seen this done quite effectively, but it's rare. That's what makes it so special. You can also, for these top prospects and collectors, have a hidden page on your website that's just for them. Or you can hold a sneak preview of your work before your next exhibit. Maybe have an hour before or the night before the opening for everyone else. Here's another idea. Throw a title party. Pamela Murphy of Sister Bay, Wisconsin, has hosted a number of them. She said, "I used to have a lot more paintings called Untitled, and I'd have a lot more of them if it weren't for my friends." She started out her title parties with dinners for 4 to 8 people. And she cooked dinner, but the key was that people couldn't eat until they actually titled all of the paintings. So they had to do that first. But now her little dinner parties have grown to parties with people with audiences of more than 100. So she says she cleans up her studio, hangs all the work, and then provides drink, food, and pencils. Throughout the evening, people write down their ideas for titles on little slips of paper that are pinned next to each painting. And at the end of the night, she, along with whomever else is left over at the end of the night, reads through all of the suggestions and chooses titles. She says, "It's not a democracy because I have final say, but she has let them in on something special. She says, I think everyone enjoys the opportunity to be part of a creative process. You can see PamelaMurphyStudio.com for more on her work. Number six, the sixth principle, is gimmicks, when authentic, sometimes work. Now, authentic gimmicks might sound like an anomaly, but when I say authentic, I mean they must come from your heart. They must be meaningful to you before they can be meaningful to someone else. They must be based on your art. A gimmick might be a theme exhibit tied into Valentine's Day, or throwing a bunch of soup bowls for a soup kitchen fundraiser that benefits the homeless. In the early 1990s, I attended the Pink Show, which contained pinkish art from three women in Oklahoma City. A year or so later, there was the Paint It Black exhibit at another gallery, where all of the work was black. And just an interesting side note, ironically, the opening for the Paint It Black exhibit was during a storm and power was lost. I believe there were a few candles around, but it really added to the black atmosphere of the evening. Okay, number seven, it's kind of similar to being authentic. Seven is create a buzz based on your personality, other interests, and your long-term goals. Anything else reeks of a sham. And we're going to go over more of this when we get to the worksheet. Number eight, events that generate buzz aren't really all about you, but about your audience. This is really hard to grasp because you know it's about you. You know your art is about you. It's personal. But if you want to generate buzz, it has to catch the imagination of everyone else. And sometimes, I hate to say it, art doesn't do that on its own. Okay, the two that I added, number nine is something I alluded to above in under number six, and that is for a bigger buzz, tie your ideas into a holiday, current event, or something else making news. Number 10, remember that the media today is much bigger than the traditional press. The outlets like newspaper, magazines, TV, and radio are matched by the buzz being created on the Internet, especially that by blog and bloggers. So you can't ignore this powerful tool. They've really become part of the media. Now, just some quick ideas for exercising your creative self-promotion muscles. I know some of you probably already do this, but I want you to pay attention to what other artists are doing to get media attention. Why are they getting media attention instead of you? Why are they creating buzz? And if you can think of certain artists who are doing this, go to google.com/alerts and set up a Google alert for that person's name. Follow them around. See, not literally, but follow them around online. See when their name appears. And if you haven't done this for yourself, do it for your name as well. You'll be notified by Google when their name and your name appears in the news. Two, look out at how other products are being promoted. We don't like to think of art as a product. We really don't. It's too personal, too indescribable. But it is a physical thing that is exchanged for money. And we can learn by watching others who are thinking out of that conservative art world box. I'm going to skip over a couple things here I want to focus on the fourth thing down. That is to make note of all of your accomplishments. And I mean all of them, not just the ones you put on a resume. I suggest that everyone, and I mean everyone, read and do the exercises in Peggy Klaus's book, Brag, The Art of Tooting Your Own Horn Without Blowing It. This book is a gold mine of information. Just when you thought you were really boring and had nothing interesting to say in your biography or about yourself, it will help you unearth the good stuff in a very authentic way. So read that. Don't forget to use a journal and to capture all of your ideas on paper somehow. You don't want thoughts to disappear before they have a chance to flower and become brilliant. You might even create a special self-promotion or brilliant marketing ideas journal and capture everything that we've done above. The final thing is read newsletters and blogs on self-promotions and marketing in general. Don't just stick to those that are for marketing and promoting art. You'll pick up some good tips on by reading those for self-promotion and marketing in general. Now, I tend to believe that, and this could be an 11th principle above, but I tend to believe that anything done in conjunction with a nonprofit organization will garner more attention and generate more buzz than those done purely for profit. Teaming up with a nonprofit for an exhibition or an opening might mean something like donating a percentage of your sales to that organization, and I encourage you to say what that number is, what percentage of sales. It might mean encouraging donations at the door or in a talk that you give to attendees, or it might mean asking people to bring cans of food for admission. I suggest that you work with nonprofits other than those set up to assist artists, mostly because you already know that artist, that audience. In order to generate buzz, you need to think beyond it. You need to go beyond your art audience. And examples of such organizations, you know them. There are healthcare organizations like the Red Cross, the American Cancer Society. They might be local food banks, AIDS charities, pets and wildlife funds, Habitat for Humanity, public television, radio. There are so many worthy causes out there. And then, when I say this, to team up with a nonprofit, I really want to make clear the benefits of teaming up with a nonprofit. And I've given you five of them. One is that you give back to your community. And by doing this, you create goodwill. And I think you always feel a greater sense of accomplishment when this happens. Two, your marketing efforts are no longer just about you, but they take on a community focus. And that exposes you to more people and ultimately to the media, which also sponsors charitable causes. You should not ever be shy about getting attention this way, because you're not just bringing attention to your work, but you're spotlighting a really good cause. A third reason to team up with a nonprofit is that you're going to meet people who can help you with your career. Nonprofit organizations are overseen by boards of directors, which are usually composed of the pillars of the community, people who buy art. Fourth is that nonprofits exist in multiple cities, that many of them exist in multiple cities, and that might provide you with a foot in the door to get into those cities in the event you want to branch out beyond your own location. And finally, nonprofits are eligible for more grants and public funding than individual artists are, and at some point you might benefit from these resources. So let me say something really important about working with a nonprofit. Don't ever, ever, ever approach a nonprofit with the intent of asking them to assist you. Nonprofits are understaffed and underfunded, and they're constantly scraping by just to meet operating expenses. So as far as you're concerned, you are there to help them. You must approach any proposal with this attitude, which is why any work with a nonprofit should come from a deep belief in their cause. It has to be sincere. And do your homework, because your reputation is at stake, and there are some shady nonprofits out there. So check with the American Institute of Philanthropy if you're here in the U.S. It's a charity watchdog organization, and you can find them at charitywatch.org. Now, quickly, we just have a couple minutes to go over the Generate Buzz with Strategic Alliances worksheet. It's a worksheet, but it is a messy process. It's not neat and orderly like I've provided you here. I've given you steps, but it might be easier for you to mind map or just brainstorm messy lists on a paper. So much about generating buzz involves working with others. So that's why I encourage you to do some sort of exercise like this worksheet for brainstorming the possibilities. to come up with lists of possible strategic alliances. And this fits so nicely into Mark Silver's presentation yesterday, and I had no idea he was going to do that. But step one, always know what you want from your art career. Identify your long-term goal and your vision. Otherwise, you could make a misstep. Step two is describe your art in detail. Your buzz must evolve from the art itself. I said that before, but I have to keep saying that. There can't be a disconnect between your buzz and your art. It has to be copacetic, let's say. So describe the style, the subjects, the colors, the medium, the size, and any other characteristics. Describe those in detail. And then step three is to go back through that description, all those descriptors that you used above, and beside each of them, list the artists, nonprofit organizations, and other alliances that might be possible based on your description. For instance, if you make portraits, A natural alliance might be with psychologists, but then it kind of ends there. However, if your portraits are of cancer patients, you can go to cancer societies, support groups, doctors. If your portraits are those who have, listen to Keziah, I think her name is Keziah Hancock. She does the portraits of those who have died in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. She does this for free. She has also enlisted the help of additional portrait painters, and her selfless act, has tied into a current event that's on everyone's mind, garnered a ton of press. You can go to heropaintings.com and see all the places it's appeared in the news and even take a look at it. Step four is to identify your hobbies, your talents, your interests and passions. Again, that book that I said, Peggy Klaus's book, Brag, will help you with that. And then you're going to, on step five, you're going to go back through step four and do the same thing that you did in step three with those three things. And then step six is to look at your responses in step three and five and look at what they have in common. What trends do you see? What holidays, current events, or themes can you piggyback on? What does your buzz-generating event look like? What does it look like? Again, it has to be authentic. It has to go with your art. It has to go with your passion. It has to be something that isn't just a good idea, but a good idea that you want to follow through on, that you're compelled to follow through on, and that you can get excited about every single day. Step seven is to look back to step one. Does your idea fit with your long-term goals? And also, one more thing. Can you see a new mission or purpose developing from this? Because once your art stops being just about you and for you, it can create a new path, a new excitement. And I love seeing that excitement with artists because that means that they're excited about sharing their art, which is much more interesting to me than selling and then self-promotions. It's sharing in a genuine way, and that can only come from being excited about it. Now, Ariane, are you on here? Okay. So page 10, low-cost ways to generate buzz. These are ways that you can start immediately for generating buzz. You know a lot of them. I'm going to add a couple more. I'm going to add the number seven, which is to write a monthly newsletter with entertaining content. Pattern it after newsletters you like and look forward to. What do you enjoy receiving? What do you eagerly anticipate in your inbox or mailbox? I think the major mistake with so many artist newsletters that I see is, once again, it's all about them. There's nothing in it for me. So do that. Number eight is to order a bumper sticker, car magnet, T-shirt, or hat with your website address or art on it. Check out makestickers.com for bumper stickers. And also, Barbara Rush of Roswell, Georgia, had a tire cover for the back of her Honda CR-V made at fastsigns.com. It has her compelling art, which is very graphic and easy to grasp from a distance. We would love to be behind it in a traffic jam. And it also has a website URL on it. She also, because she sent it to me, she received tons of links from a number of blog posts after I posted a picture of her car on my blog. So good ideas travel fast and result in free publicity. Let me leave you with this before getting to some of your questions. There are no rules that say you can't do this and you can't do that to promote your art. Be as creative as your comfort level allows and stay within your financial means. Involving more people in planning an event means sharing the expenses and generating a bigger buzz. So I'm also going to leave you with this challenge. Challenge. You ready for it? I'm sorry, you can't hear me. Okay. Oh, I can't hear you. Here's your challenge. Dream up one big, fantastic event that you can implement in the next 2 years. One big, fantastic event to generate buzz. Go back over your notes from this seminar. Listen to the recording again. Listen to all the other speakers. What one big thing can you do in the next year that doesn't cost much money but can generate a bunch of buzz for you?
Thank you, Allison. I'm back on with you.
Okay.
Wow. I'm telling you, you are the reason Smartest does so well. You just gave us so much in this 45 minutes that I can't believe it's only been 45 minutes.
I can't believe it. I can't believe I got it all in.
It's not even 45 minutes. We're not even finished with 45 minutes.
Great. I wanted to leave a few minutes at the end.
Okay. So you said that of the questions I sent you, you liked that second one about the websites. Was that
I
the one you were referring to?
I love it. Okay. Could you ask it again, because I don't have it right in front of me.
No problem. So here's what one of our Smartest sent in today. What are some specific ways to use our websites to generate actual sales? Like send people to Etsy or eBay, sell from the site directly, getting information from site visitors. I have a site and a blog, and she put, thanks to Allison.
Oh, she did?
She did.
But the blog. I'm sure she meant the blog. Okay, yeah.
But they just sort of sit there, not working for me.
Oh, then she's not listening. Okay, so here's the thing, is you have to promote your website and blog as much as you promote yourself and your art. People don't come just because you build it. There's so many other websites and blogs on there. Remember that the web is about information. We go to the web to get information. One mistake that artists make is putting too little text on their website. We want to know. We want to learn. We want to know. We want to find out. We want to discover. Your work doesn't speak for itself, so you've got to add some more text. Another thing is to, again, I said this in the presentation, but to make sure you can differentiate your art from all the other millions of websites that are out there. Why should they come to yours? Okay, now I have another trick, a very specific thing about capturing contact info on a website. And I should say collecting contact information rather than capturing it. Because people will only give you their contact information if you give them something they want in return. Artists make this mistake all the time. They make this mistake in their festival booths by putting out a guest book and just asking people to sign up for a mailing list. Well, these days people don't sign up for mailing lists unless they know exactly what they're going to get. I don't. Do you, Ariane?
Nope, never have.
No, we don't do that. We want to know exactly what we're going to
do. And neither do the artists.
No,
what the artists don't do is pay attention to how they behave with these things and realize
right.
that their audience is going to behave the same way.
Right. So you tell them, I'm going to send you no more than one email a month. You'll get, you know, one newsletter every quarter, whatever it is, and then provide a sample of that. You might also give them a small free digital image that they can download of your work. Of course, it's small because you don't want to be giving away your images. An e-card that they can send to someone, a newsletter that has good content in it, tips for hanging art, anything, but tell them exactly what they're going to get or they're not going to sign up for it. And then you have to drive people there to sign up. And you can do that, by the way, you can do that by creating a newsletter, by creating emails that send people back to your website in order to get something else or to see something new with, and you have to do that with enticing language. You can't just say, and this is a huge mistake that I see artists do. I think they're doing it less and less, but I get emails all the time. Ariane, you probably do this, says, I just got a new website. Go look at it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love those. Like, why in the world, you know, tell me what's there.
And do we go look at them?
No, absolutely. Who has time to do that?
Right.
Who has time to do that? So give me some enticing reason to go look at your website. You know, make up a good story that I'm going to go find on your website. That you have to learn to look at the way other people are promoting things and pay attention to what entices you. And that will get people to your website.
Excellent. I really like that one. I just want to have you do a couple minutes on this about art businesses faring in a recession. I know this connection is constantly on artists' mind and that they buy into the current cultural story, whatever that is. In my mind, it has a lot to do with just how we all buy into fear without really looking at our own personal situation. And we just assume it's going to be a horrible thing because everybody's saying recession.
Right.
And that presets the way we look, it gives us kind of a pair of glasses that we start to look through that immediately limits our ability to be creative and aggressive.
Right. Well, you just answered it beautifully.
Well, that's just my perspective. I want to hear yours.
Well, you know what I really want to know, and this the question which just came up right before our call, I really do want to do some research because I do want to know how art fairs in these times and historically, just because I'm an art historian by training, so I do want to know that. But I also think that it's really important to, like you said, keep going. You know, don't you know, save where you can. Everyone tells you to save right now, and that's always a good idea. Save money where you can. Don't spend any money that you don't have to. But don't slack off just because you think no one's buying. You know, there's so, with email and the creative self-promotion ideas that I gave you today, there's so many ways that you can keep getting your art out there without spending a bundle. And there's still tons of venues that need to show art. You know, they've got schedules to keep up. So they're not going to stop showing art all of a sudden. So.
Absolutely. I think the other difficulty with this question is when you take the term art businesses, and that, it's only two words, but those two words represent probably hundreds of different categories of art businesses.
Oh, yeah.
And how you would track each one of those. I think the tendency is to assume that that means more the high-end gallery collector place, which I don't think actually fares probably all that bad in a recession because it is high-end. So it has a lot to do with your specific art form, your specific audience, and what's going on for them at that time. The other thing you can do is pay attention to your audience and make sure that if they're feeling they're in a recession, there's a way you can actually address that as you're promoting your art.
Right, right. And I think it's really important to, I think it's important to see what's going on in the news, but I think it's also important to filter it because you know, this is the reason that I love The Daily Show so much. Not because I get real news there, but because they put it in a different perspective for me. You know,
right.
Because every bit of news information comes with some sort of bias.
Right, right.
So,
absolutely.
So keep going. It's not going to, the world isn't going to stop all of a sudden. You don't want to get left behind.
Great. Oh, Allison, thank you. This has been just a really wonderful session. I can't tell you. I've got 5 pages of notes here. I couldn't stop writing. It was great. Thank you so much.
I'm happy to share this, and I really hope that people take me up on that challenge.
And remember about her book, I'd Rather Be in the Studio, The Artist's No Excuse Guide to Self-Promotion. You'll find it at her website, artbizcoach.com, and we'll be hopefully seeing you soon.
Thank you, Ariane.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
If you are just joining us, you are on the fifth day of Smartest 2008 and the third day of our keynote presentations with Molly Gordon, Allison Stanfield, and Attorney DeBoss. Allison has just finished her presentation, and we're going to take a 15-minute break and come back for, hopefully, Attorney Leonard DeBoss. If he is, for any reason, unable due to his jury schedule, I will have some special surprise for you. So we'll see everybody in 15 minutes. Bye-bye.